Welcome to MGO Podcast 9.7, Child Cough Drop Addiction Update. I break him up in my mouth so he doesn't choke on him, so when he wants a yuck, he just reaches directly into my mouth, whether I have one or not. So, Ace, you had a thematically appropriate view from the press box from this week.
Well, thankfully, Dave switched seats with me when the game actually started, but so, there was just like a wide beam directly in front of me at the seat I was assigned to, so I could only see the red zones.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know, right? It's not a game for that.
No, that's, I guess the defensive red zone saw a lot of action in this one.
Yeah, a little bit.
Michigan 27, Indiana 20 in overtime, further confirming my theory that all the narrow wins and fortune Michigan gets are against Indiana and Northwestern.
Yeah.
And all the terrible luck is against Ohio State and Michigan State.
I'd like that to change at some point, I think.
I could take a loss to Northwestern if we get like five turnovers in an Ohio State game.
I would happily make that trade.
All right, this is MGO Podcast 9.7. We would like to thank our sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, The Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshore Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. Of course, we are in one of the conference rooms at the Ann Arbor Residence Inn downtown. The Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Mm-hmm.
They have 13 conference rooms, one for every Big Ten team.
Do we have to change that now? Well, I think we have to swap which Big Ten team the 13th one is now.
They only have 12 conference rooms now. 12 conference rooms.
You're out of Illinois.
You're out of Illinois. Oh, man. All right, so we talk about this game?
I think so.
But first, a little bit of Ann Arbor flavor for you.
All right.
I was driving in. I was picking up stuff, and I saw a car. Had one of those, like, baby, don't crash into this car stickers, which is like, really? You expect that people are just going to be like, this person doesn't have a baby in their car. But anyway, it didn't say baby on board. It said baby up in this bitch.
You know, I appreciate the variation.
It's some Ann Arbor flavor for you.
A little bit.
Flavor for you. All right. Offense, such as it was.
I mean, there was a running game.
There was, but nobody wants to talk about that for first.
I mean, I know.
Everybody wants
to. I was trying to steer it in a positive direction, Brian.
We'll get to that. But the elephant in the room is that John O'Korn threw for 2.9 yards an attempt.
And had two passing yards in the second half in overtime.
And did not get pulled. And you can say, oh, he didn't turn over the ball, but he did. He threw an interception.
That was a terrible one.
Called back. And should not have been called back.
No. There was one of those on each side, but man, that should have been a pick.
Yes, and then there was another one where he threw it at a defender, and I was like tweeting out, get this guy off the damn field.
Mm-hmm.
And I still feel, get this guy off the damn field. It's, I mean, 3 yards an attempt. You can't live like that.
No, especially not when you're heading to face a top five team.
Let's not talk about that.
On the road.
But we saw the second half, you know, the kind of like last straw, I think, for a lot of people was, okay, Michigan drops back in the second half, and they've got a two-man route.
Yeah.
There are two men in the route.
Two.
How many men are in the route? Ace.
Two.
How many men are covering one of the guys in the route?
Two.
How many guys are covering the other guy in the route?
Zero.
Who gets the throw?
Not the one you should have thrown to.
Ah! What are you going to do? Like, we kind of theorized in the Purdue game that a lot of the stuff that he was getting was just, like, his first read was open.
Yeah.
He was identifying a guy before the snap, and he did a good job of that. But when it was necessary for him to find a second or third guy, he was
struggling
unproven
a little bit
in that department.
Yeah.
And then against Michigan State, didn't do it at all. And against Indiana, it
seems like he just predetermines where he's going with the ball.
Yeah, I mean, We keep comparing him to a Madden player, and it's like,
yeah,
kind of like a guy who hasn't played a lot of Madden playing Madden.
Yep.
That Crawford throw was just like, ugh. Like, there were people up in the press box, like, who aren't, like, partisans, like Dan Murphy from ESPN, who seemed a little bit offended on behalf of the game of football after that play.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough when you're watching two guys go into a route and one guy is wide open and the other guy is double covered. And, I mean, that's the simplest read you're going to get.
Yeah, and you don't make it. And you, like, really, really don't make it.
And it wasn't just, it wasn't like he was pressured. He actually had a very clean pot, and, you know, max protect.
Yeah,
he had all day to survey that and still managed to make the wrong choice.
Yeah, and then Michigan takes a delay game penalty on the shovel pass that they were obviously trying to save.
Oh, my God, I forgot about that.
And you're not in the box, so, like, you don't see, like, shot of Jim Harbaugh after that play. And, you know, this year's Jim Harbaugh, like, he got a penalty last year. They're kind of, like, trying to, like, up their enforcement of yelling guys on the sideline, and he's dialed it back.
Yeah.
And this was like a guy trying not to relapse on the sideline.
Yeah. Michigan still did get a sideline warning in this game. They announced that. I don't remember what play it was after, but we did get warned, like, relatively early on.
Yeah. But it was, pretty much a worst case scenario. He had, like, the one awesome thing where he escaped a sack and then
floated one to DPJ.
Right. But, like, even that's not in the context of the offense, right? It's like, okay, I broke the pocket and now I'm going to try to find a guy downfield, which is a legitimate talent he has and apparently the only talent he has.
Yeah. Like, he can do the scramble drill. And other than the scramble drill, it's not going so well.
You can't build the whole plane out of scramble drill.
No, you cannot.
So, people on the internet were wroth. And so I agree with them. Like, I'm not going to complain about most of my mentions again. Okay, that's a lie.
Yeah, we got a whole thing.
No, I mean, they're like, I tweeted out, like, all right, we're going to die against Penn State, and then it's Peter's time. And somebody replied, why? And I'm like, what? Why? Did you watch football? But yeah, I'm pretty much done with Okorn. Like, he might improve. He can't improve enough, I think, to be a factor, to make Michigan a factor in the conference race. So,
and even though the offense has struggled quite a bit, Michigan is still very much in that. So,
yeah, I mean, we're going to see what happens against Penn State. I mean, they were in a rock fight with Iowa, and that's not – they're kind of in a rock fight with Northwestern for a large portion of that game, and then they pulled away. So, I don't necessarily think Michigan is going to get killed despite that tweet. I mean, I do think that they're going to lose. And then once that happens, there's no reason not to go to Brandon Peters. Because Brandon Peters is going to be here next year. And Brandon Peters can probably match 3 yards an attempt and should have been two interceptions against Indiana, a decent but not great passing offense. I mean, passing defense. Very visual ace right now.
Yeah, I'm ready for Peters, too.
I mean, what... He had the nice Purdue game, but that's clearly an outlier in his career.
Yeah, I mean, we've got the Houston evidence. We've got last year's Indiana game. We've got now this year's Indiana game.
Yeah. I mean, he was more effective as a passer in last year's Indiana game, if you can believe that.
I almost have a difficult time believing that, but yeah.
I mean, Michigan turtled in this game, and I think that was the exact right move because they had no quarterback. And when they would move the ball on the ground, which we're going to get to in a second.
Yes,
for anyone who's
we will actually get to the positive part of this.
Preparing a noose. They'd move the ball on the ground, and then Harbaugh would be like, all right, let's see if we can get some minimally competent quarterbacking. And the answer was always no. So,
yeah.
I mean, feel bad for the guy, but he's got to go. He can't hack it. And he's a fifth-year senior. There's no reason to expect that he's suddenly going to Rudock himself into shape, because Rudock came in and improved a great deal.
Yeah,
after learning what the offense was, and he has no comparable improvement path. All right, the run game though,
shockingly effective.
Now this is a Indiana defense that came into the game as like a decent but not great run defense.
Yeah, like top 25-ish.
Wait, that really?
Maybe not quite that high. That was their overall defense. I'm sorry.
Give me their S&P there, buddy. Because I if that was
heading into the game. Oh, I take it back. They were 80th in success rate, but 5th in explosiveness.
Right. So you kind of add that up, and it's like a good run defense that like gives up a sizable chunk of the line yards, but doesn't let you.
Yeah, they hold a lot down.
And Michigan for most of this game was holding that true, and then they broke out a counter in the fourth quarter that they had not shown before.
Mm-hmm.
I assume they were hoping to save it for Penn State.
I would guess that too.
Yeah, so they ran it three times on this drive in the fourth quarter, and the third time is the time it broke big. And they're all it'll be in UFR, and I'm guessing Seth is going to sharpie it. And now it's on film. But it was very effective. It was a counter that went to the right side of the line after both the fullback and the running back fainted to the left side of the line.
Yeah.
And the thing that kind of leapt out to me is that the right tackle and the right guard, JBB and Onwenu, had really just caved guys in on all three of those plays.
They really did. Those guys can move people.
And like the kind of the hope with Bushel Beatty was that he was going to be as bad of a pass protector
and an upgrade on the ground.
And I feel like we saw that. We saw him move guys. He did give up one pretty terrible pressure.
Yeah, but pass protection wasn't a total disaster.
No, I mean, they only threw 20 times.
Yeah.
Although there were penalties and stuff, so probably 20, 22 or 23, but whatever. And in addition to that, which is kind of like a power run, I thought that they managed to run zone much better this week. And I got frustrated, and I tweeted out something about how Isaac didn't make a cut, and nobody on the team knows how to run an inside zone. A little bit of a momentary frustration with the loss that should not have been a loss, but we saw Michigan go two tights in ace sets and then run inside zone, and the seas rather parted on a lot of those.
They really did. There were some a lot more cavernous holes than we were used to, where running backs actually got to the second level untouched.
Yeah, and they had to make a cut, but they knew that they did, and they did make that cut. So Higdon had an excellent day kind of picking through the trash and then going and getting it. And, you know, they only had like a couple of crack sweeps, and one of them was was telegraphed. One of them was not and was successful. But, you know, you're kind of seeing this ground game round into more of a Harbaugh ground game.
Yeah.
Where you've got 10, 12, 15 different plays that you have to, like, prepare for every game. And in this one, you know, you saw, I think, a pretty even mix of both zone and power. So that was what was working last week against Michigan State. And because of the circumstances of that game, the numbers didn't come out right.
Yeah.
But the blocking was actually good. We hit our Mendoza line in UFR 68%. And I think we're going to exceed that this week.
I would think so, too. I was quite impressed with. I thought Onwenu had a great game at first glance.
Yeah, me too. I haven't been able to look over it in detail, but I mean, he made the Pro Football Focus All Big Ten team last week. I agreed with that. I thought Kugler was about on his level, and now that Wheatley's getting a little bit healthier, he even caught a pass in this one. Like, he's not necessarily a run tip, so you can use him more often. And he's by far Michigan's most people moving defensive tight end. And, you know, you kind of might be seeing, like, the beginning of a positive, very good Harbaugh run game that hopefully will persist a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, if he can do it with this line, I would assume it can only get better going forward. And, I mean, this was an impressive performance against a team that, I mean, Indiana held down Saquon Barkley in the Penn State game. You know, this is a run defense that can be pretty solid, and to see especially Higdon breaking multiple runs where he's able to break contain and get out there, in addition to Michigan actually moving people, the fact that they had plays that were made by the offensive line and also plays that were made by the running backs.
Yes, that's an excellent point. So last week, I think a big part of the 3.8 yards an attempt for the backs was that they didn't really make anything themselves.
Yeah.
In this game, we saw two big bounces from Higdon, one in overtime, one for Michigan's first touchdown, where he saw the opportunity and he went and he got it. And that those are his yards.
There were a couple other plays. I think there was one play where a run gets strung out to the sideline, and I was dead sure he was getting stopped at the line of scrimmage. Okay. And he somehow just kind of powers through and churns out like 5 yards out of that.
Yeah, I remember that one.
And that was all him. And I had given up. I like looked back up and was like, wait, why is the ball spotted there?
Yeah.
But that was, I thought he was, we haven't seen, Evans is not a very powerful guy, and he hasn't really had many opportunities to make guys miss. Isaac tends to go down on first contact for the most part, but Higdon has really been creating some yards.
Yeah, and Isaac had a couple of flashes in this game.
He did.
He does have a size and speed combination that, even though he goes down on first contact, that first contact is usually a little bit further downfield than it is for a lot of people, and then he falls forward very consistently. So he had a solid game as well. Evans, he gets buried in the backfield.
I feel like he's had the worst luck of any back in recent memory in terms of just the blocking in front of him compared to the rest of the backs.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he had a couple of bad plays in the Michigan State game. I have no opinion yet about his performance here, but obviously if he's getting 5 yards on 8 carries, it's tough to keep giving him the ball, even if he is getting the worst luck. And then I guess we have to talk about the wide receivers for some reason.
I was excited when Zach Gentry was a starting wide receiver, and they threw it to him.
It is 9 yards, and I was like, all right, let's just keep doing that.
Yeah, that's our new outside receiver. Let's go with it. But they didn't stick with that.
And, don't throw fades at Eddie McDoom. I mean, I know that there are other routes, and I assume that was just like, okay, we know that nobody's ever going to throw this at Eddie McDoom. But somebody did. And it was an interception that was called back on a pretty terrible penalty. But let's not do that. Let's do the thing that they did afterwards where they gave McDoom a reverse and he was doing his McDoom thing.
Yes.
Like, okay, yes, that's how we use him. Maybe throw him some screens. Maybe throw a slant at him. I can live with a McDoom slant.
Yeah, because there's enough variation that they can do with the McDoom package that it's not necessarily a tip that the defense is going to be able to be all over a play.
Right. But you just can't throw a fade at him because...
No, it apparently never works.
It never even comes close to working.
No.
So...
And you have about, 12 guys on the roster that you'd prefer throwing fades to, including guys who are redshirting.
Yeah. Nico Collins traveled, but he didn't play in this game. So we'll see if that changes. I guess at this point it's not. And I assume that Shane Lee was out for a second week because he was injured. And then... you have Peoples Jones, who gets called for holding, and yeah, that was holding, because he's like comically kind of like hugging a guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh,
yeah, his blocking still, has a little bit of
he's learned how to hug
room to grow.
He also was like 5 yards past the safety. On
my goodness, I can't
touchdown.
How do you overthrow Donovan Peoples Jones?
Well,
it's difficult.
I don't.
You don't want to talk about it.
I don't want to talk about it. And then we kind of have to talk about Kikoa Crawford, because.
It's reaching the point where I'm getting upset that he's just on the field.
He got a personal foul in this for some dumb stuff. Like, he's on the sideline, the play's over, and he's still, like, whacking at this guy and throwing him on the ground. And then he gets up and he kind of, like, barks at the coaches, who are probably telling him, hey, don't take personal fouls. Good advice.
Yes, very much so.
And while the double cover target was not his fault, that was actually a well-thrown ball that he had an opportunity on, and someone grabbed his arm and he didn't make a play. Not a huge black mark against him, but also, how many times has he been targeted and how many times has he missed?
Yeah, I mean, we've got an increasing pile of evidence that he is not great at adjusting to balls downfield and going up and getting them.
Yeah. And then, of course, the onside kick
clangs off his hands.
Yeah. And
it was kind of a funky bounce, but man, you're on the hands team. You're a wide out. Yeah. You just got to grab it.
I think his positioning is the bad part. So, like, you got to keep that ball in front of you. And if you're in that position and you're not a couple yards back, the thing that almost happened can happen.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can take him out, because who are you going to put in? Like, his Zach Gentry.
Yeah, that would be my choice.
I'd be fine with that. I'd be
fine. I was very excited to see him out there as a starter. And a starter who was split out wide.
And then Grant Perry had no catches in this game.
He had a drop.
Did he?
Oh, he had a short underneath drop. I mean, it wasn't like a big deal, but I think he did drop a ball.
Okay. Well, if you can't get even one catch to Grant Perry, I think that kind of says it all about
Yeah, I mean, they have, Gentry gets 2 catches for 15 yards. One of them's on the very first play of the game.
Yeah.
McKeown has 1 catch for 2 yards. Perry ends up with no catches. We've been talking about how those three are the guys that need to be highlighted in the passing game.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm glad they took deep shots to Donovan Peoples, a deep shot to Donovan Peoples Jones, even though it didn't connect. But he's obviously still figuring out the rest of the route tree.
Yeah. Well, you know, they have some screens in there. They have some out of the pocket stuff. I don't know if they got more than one or two things all game that was like as designed and was like a downfield throw. So
yeah, the 4 yard out to Ty Wheatley.
Yeah. Well, with the run game kind of coming up here, this is an almost complete team that just has an absolute black hole in the passing game.
Yep.
And I don't know what you do about that. I mean, I know what I would do. I'd put in Brandon Peters and see what happens. And, you know, maybe I'd keep that on the, like, maybe I'd be like, all right, we're probably going to lose Penn State no matter what happens. We're going to take our medicine and then Brandon Peters can, like, start against Rutgers.
Yeah.
Which he'll probably be okay at. Like,
okay. One would hope.
You know, he's only played in high school, but hey, you're still playing in high school. Should I back off that after the Illinois game, which we'll talk about?
No, that is clearly just a sign that Illinois is like a middle school team.
Oh,
they're playing a bunch of like 17-year-olds, so it's not that far off.
Poor Illinois fans.
Yeah.
Like they used to have basketball, at least, and now they haven't had anything.
They don't even really have that now.
Since D. Brown. Come on, man.
Oof.
I think if we're talking about Illinois, it's time to stop talking in this segment. Oh, one last thing. Kareem Walker got a carry.
A nice one.
He did well on it. So, like, maybe we'll see a little bit more of him going forward. Also, his dreads.
Fantastic. Phenomenal.
Like, he's got them all, like, tied up, and it's still like, my God, that.
He's got serious dread flow.
Yeah. Dread, that's dread flow. There we go.
So, yeah, more of that.
Yeah, now it's definitely time for the defense.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Michigan gives up 20 points in this game, but short field for one of them after a big punt return.
Yeah.
And they faced a ton of opposition possessions that they mostly got three and outs on.
Mm-hmm.
When they did get got, it was kind of like old style. This happens to you sometimes where you're trying to get your guys some rest, and your backups are on the field, and they get locked on the field.
Yeah, and so Indiana's kind of grounded out touchdown drive was that, where they just tempoed Michigan.
And yeah, with Kemp
it's
on the
still
field,
just
with Solomon on the field, and like it's Mike DeBoer doing this, but it's not really. I mean, he walks.
It's Kevin Wilson's ghost doing this,
right? Exactly. Like you walk into a culture and you don't really change it in the first year because you don't have time. So like it's still pretty much.
Also, it works, so you should maybe consider keeping it, but yeah, you know he won't.
Happen. So we won't really see the full majesty of fully operational Indiana battle station yet.
No.
It did strike me how DeBoer's like, okay, we're going to get after these guys. We're going to use their aggressiveness against them. That's my Mike DeBoer impression. I don't know.
So let's dial up the transcontinental.
Which they've already seen this year.
Yeah, and also Michigan has seen that since Mike DeBoer was calling it for them. So.
And then they run like a bunch of tunnel screens where the twist is it's the slot receiver, it's not the outside receiver, and it's like Purdue already did that too. But
yep.
I tried a throwback which wasn't there, and I'm just like, at least
he's still Mike DeBoer.
He's really.
We have confirmed.
His bright ideas were like, all right, we're going to do the things that already worked against Michigan and hope that they didn't notice.
And when you're going against Don Brown, that seems like a losing plan.
Yeah. So, other than kind of the let's get the guys locked on the field drive, they really couldn't do anything on the ground, pretty much as expected.
7 3 and outs plus a interception after two plays and the goal line stand in overtime. I mean, that's a pretty darn good performance.
Well, and the goal line stand, it's like, okay, they get the ball down to like the four.
First and goal on the three.
It's second and one, and then they run, and then they go tempo right after that. And I know exactly what's coming. They're going to inside zone. They inside zone. Michigan knows exactly what's coming, and they stuff it at the line. And I was just like, this is how the decay begins.
Yeah.
Where you're doing the thing, but like you continue doing the same thing over and over again that you've already done before because there are no new ideas. And so that'll be interesting to watch over the next couple of years how that impacts the Indiana offense. But Michigan, you know, stuffs them up, and they stuff them up again. And then on third down, they went with a pass play, right?
Yeah. They kind of had a guy. Harris was breaking open for a moment, and Ramsey held onto the ball too long.
So I think the corner over there was long.
I think so.
And he had a very tough job because there was a guy behind him.
Yeah, they did a nice job of flooding that side.
Right, and so he's trying to like dissuade both throws at the same time by kind of midpointing those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that successfully. And maybe that was Peyton Ramsey being a redshirt freshman, but just being able to put enough doubt into him.
Yeah.
Was a really good job by him on a play that I think Michigan was beat schematically on.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think if Ramsey has the confidence to throw that early, that's a pretty easy touchdown to Harris.
But Long managed to split it. And then on fourth down, they roll to the...
To Chase Winovich's side, his hair is on fire. Well, literal fire.
And if you look at the replay of this, like nobody is even close to open.
No.
Like, Michigan has all three of these guys completely blank.
Cobbs, yeah, I mean, like, throwing it to Cobbs is probably the play at that point because he's semi-Cobbs, but he had, like, the entire Michigan defense on him.
And speaking of Cobbs, he barely got targeted in the second half.
Yeah.
And part of that is probably just...
That's been an odd trend for Indiana all year, yeah. A little bit, where they're not just forcing the ball to him, even though it seems like that might be their best offense at times.
Yeah, and he almost gets a 62-yard catch and run on a pretty bizarre play where he's out of bounds.
Yeah, like Watson does a nice job of forcing his route into the sideline, but then Cobbs kind of like uses the where he is out of bounds to gain a step on him.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of tough coverage to judge, but he puts the guy literally out of bounds.
Yeah.
I don't think you can do it much better than that. And then Long had a couple of plays where they're trying to fade it to Cobbs, and Long anticipates this, knows what's going on, and basically just shuts him down.
Yeah, does pick up a flag on one of them when he gets a little too handsy, but I was okay with the way he was doing it.
That was a terrible call.
Yeah.
For one, that's a back shoulder where the guy's not anywhere near the back shoulder.
I didn't think it was catchable.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
And they still call that, and it's like the way that he was pass interfering, if he was pass interfering, was being like shoving him into the boundary, which had nothing to do with the back shoulder throw that was being called.
Yeah.
So that was another terrible call after the bad man yelled. it's just so frustrating. Because, Michigan gets a terrible call in their favor on the interception, and then Tom Allen calls timeout specifically so he can yell at the referees for 3 minutes.
And that was a good use of a timeout.
And that worked. And then the rest of the game was just a series of calls, about half of them legitimate and half of them ridiculous against Michigan. Some of them on the same play.
Yeah.
So Hurst jumps off sides and then nails the quarterback, and they give him the world's worst personal foul for roughing the passer.
Yeah, looking at that, Hurst roughed himself more than he roughed Ramsey, because he ended up kind of like planting himself into the ground, he doesn't land on Ramsey.
The ball's out, and then a half second later, Hurst impacts the guy, and then they both fall to the ground. Like, it's a tackle. He tackled him.
Yeah.
It wasn't late, and you're just making crap up. It drives me crazy. Drives me crazy. And then, the third cornerback that we haven't talked about yet had an awesome interception.
And just a pretty darn good game in general. But man, LeVert, that pick was perfect coverage.
Textbook, yeah.
To force the guy into the sideline like that, turn around, box him out, and then absolutely high point that ball. That was gorgeous. Yeah.
So, Mike Zordich, good job.
Yes. He seems to have worked out a lot of the inconsistency with Hill that we were a little bit concerned about coming out of high school.
Now
he's kind of on that early Jordan Lewis track a little bit.
A little bit. He's
like right on it. Shoot. I mean, he's actually getting his hands on the ball. Come to think of it, he might be ahead.
Well, that was Jordan Lewis as a freshman.
Oh yeah, that's true.
So this is year two for
yeah.
him. So this is when.
Okay, so he's on the Jordan Lewis track.
Yeah,
that's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Especially since David Long's looking pretty darn good himself.
Yeah. And Brandon Watson, like, is a guy who I was like,
we'd kind of written him off.
Not written him off, but, like, this guy doesn't have much upside.
Yeah.
And he's playing just about as well as anybody on the defense.
Yeah, they're quite comfortable putting him out there as the second corner.
Yeah, and they rotate those three guys, and they don't have to. You don't have to rotate cornerbacks, but that tells you how much confidence they have in him. So, man, that was a misleading press conference.
I mean, it worked. If the intention was to light a fire under everybody, maybe that was what they needed. I mean, I'm assuming whatever he said in the meeting rooms was 1,000 times worse than what he said to the assembled media. But
a couple bad things from the safeties in this game. Metellus had a guy boxed in on the sideline on like 3rd and 5, and somehow that turns into a first down. It was inexplicable to me that, like, not only did that guy get by Metellus, but he didn't step out, because it's just like...
Just push him.
Yeah, you won. Just put him in the sideline, and that didn't happen. And then on the Indiana touchdown, after the punt return, I'm not entirely sure on this, but I do think that Michigan anticipated kind of a pick route drag, and they had Cannell in the area as kind of a robber safety.
Mm-hmm.
He bites on a different route and is not in position to tackle. And I'm pretty sure that, like, his number one priority on that should have been
the drag.
I feel that was Don Brown baiting the drag throw. So it looks like man coverage. It is man coverage, but they're spending their extra guy in coverage to combat that little mesh route.
Yeah.
And Cannell didn't get it done. So don't take that to the bank, because I haven't, like, looked at it in detail, but that was my first impression on the replay there. So, you know, a couple of hiccups here and there. And then, you know, the one thing that I think really surprised me is that Indiana's pass protection was functional. And every Michigan opponent to date has just been absolutely overrun. And in this game, there were several instances where Michigan's coverage was a little bit, not exposed, but, you know, they had more time to explore holes in it because people weren't getting to them.
Yeah, especially they're able to get a lot of stuff under. I mean, I was quite surprised at Luke Timian's stat line considering what his numbers were heading into this game because he's the dude with under 4 yards per target heading into this game, just hideous numbers. And he finishes with 7 catches for 95 yards, and a lot of it was stuff where he came open underneath with a lot of room to run after the catch.
Yeah, and I mean, part of this is the fact that there were two, I thought, pretty obvious intentional groundings that they refused to call.
I agree with you there.
I mean, especially the second one where he's in the grasp of someone and he's just throwing at nobody. And
ball doesn't land within 15 yards. I mean, I know there's a receiver in the area if we're considering the area to be about a 20-yard portion of the field.
And like, you know, if you get hit on a throw and it's nowhere near someone, that's one thing. But if you are being sacked and you try to throw the ball and because you are being sacked, the ball is not near anyone, that should be grounding.
Yeah.
Like, that, I don't...
Because that is the intention of the rule.
Right, yeah.
Is that you can't just throw it out of a sack.
Yeah.
And that is precisely what he did.
And then, like, one of them didn't even reach the line of scrimmage, but there was like, oh, there's a guy, like, somewhere near the frame.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another one where Gary was sacking the guy, and Ramsey actually made a really good play where he flipped it to Timmy.
He managed to get... That was quite improbable.
And, like,
poor damn Rashawn Gary.
I know. He should have, like, 5 or 6 sacks this year, and it's just always, like...
At least he got one this game.
He did.
And he had 2.5 tackles. Like, he had a productive game, but it should have been even more productive.
Yeah, he's had, like half-yard sacks deemed zero-yard tackles for 0 yards.
He's had Devin Bush rob him of sacks.
Yes, he's been like the
guy. Or Chase Winovich or Maurice Hurst.
Who just, like, is a half-second late as everybody else eats the quarterback's bones. He's had intentional groundings that don't go his way. He's had people throw out of it effectively.
I kind of suspect that, especially if this continues, that people are going to think that he has been a disappointment.
Right.
And they're going to head into the next season thinking that he's not going to be some sort of All-American hell beast, and he's going to be exactly that.
I mean, he pretty much already is. This was his most impactful game, I think.
Yeah.
So not only was he racking up some stats in this game, but I thought he outplayed Chase Winovich, probably for the first time this year. I mean, I'm not saying that Winovich had a bad game.
Yeah.
But I felt...
That's more a statement of how good Winovich has been.
Right. Like, I felt that Gary was more there in this game. Part of the reason that Michigan did have a little bit of a struggle getting to the quarterback is that Indiana had their starting right tackle back.
Yes, Brandon Knight was a huge upgrade over the prior injury replacement, Delroy Baker, who was just a turnstile.
So during the game, one of the Pro Football Focus guys tweeted at me that he had like 4 sacks and 9 hurries and 2 hits given up, and nobody else on the offensive line was charged with more than one. So
yeah, Coy Cronk has come a long way.
Yeah, well, I mean, that happens.
Yeah, when you're a true freshman.
So
it's rough.
You know, this might be like a legitimately good pass-protecting offensive line that Michigan went up against. So I wouldn't sound the alarm, not that anybody is, about this defense. So,
yeah, that was heading off the craziest possible complaint, I think. But
yeah, well,
established anyway.
I mean, it was surprising. It's nice.
Yeah,
it's nice that you're shocked whenever anyone can like have a 7-step drop and not immediately get sacked.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit worried that Devin Bush is... his blitzes are being a little bit less effective, so people are picking him up, which is never great.
Yeah.
I mean, he did a good job of, like, when the running back picked him up, he was able to, like, drive him back into the quarterback and flush. So that's an effective pass rush, but it's not like, oh, I sacked you for negative 1,000 yards. So, I mean, that was probably inevitable, but...
Yeah, given the way he started the season, teams were going to start adjusting to, like, prioritize him.
I think I'm worried that Don Brown doesn't have more blitzes he can think of. So
he is Dr. Blitz.
We
don't have to worry about that too much.
Dr. Blitz. So this game doesn't really change my opinion about this defense in any way
They're still very, very, very good.
Except we have like another pretty good chunk of data that these cornerbacks are excellent.
Yeah. And especially with Hill, where, man, he's looking like he's going to be a star.
Well, I was actually going to say, especially with Long.
This is a good development.
It's a good situation.
Yeah. I mean, they've both been excellent. So. And Hill even had a pretty decent like tackle on the edge in this game. Like his run support has been
well. I mean, they were both very good against Air Force.
Yeah. So, but that like I'm still looking for data on that because Hill like that did not jump out to me when he was in high school.
No, but I like Long like just being able to like take Simi Cobbs largely out of the offense is like, hey,
you know, Ohio State couldn't do that.
No, they could not. I mean, one cornerback couldn't do it. They managed to do it in the second half by like sacrificing a safety over him all the time, and I don't think Michigan had to do that for much of this game. I'm sure they did.
No, it did not seem like they were rolling coverage over him too much, at least from my perspective.
And then we saw a fair amount of Brian Monet, and Brian Monet did Brian Monet things.
Yes, he is very difficult to run against,
and that's about it, man.
Yeah,
they're this defense, and that's a good thing. All right, we're going to take one more break, come back, talk special teams and some feelings ball and some game theory.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well-known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue. Their licensed teams will install the fixes. They will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and they even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815 or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Check it out, you got me mesmerized with your black hair and your fat thighs. Street poetry is my everyday, but yo, I gotta stop when you drop my way. If I was working at the club, you would not pay. Ayo, my man Fife Diggy, he got something to say.
I like him brown, yellow, Puerto Rican, a Haitian. Name is Fife Borg from the Zulu Nation. Told you in the jam that we could get down. Now let's knock the boots like the group H-Town. You got BBD.
You know what isn't made out of kittens, Brian?
What?
beets.
Okay.
Do you know what has beets in it?
No.
Lantana hummus.
Oh, that's right, because it's got they got the beet one.
Yeah.
It's weird because like beets are bad, but this is good.
Yeah.
It's weird. I like, you know, you try to get me to eat a beet and I'm like, hey, I'm going to fight you.
Get this beet out of here.
Right. And then, but I had this hummus and I was like, this is the best thing.
Beet related thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they put goat cheese and walnuts on it. And I'm like, dude, it's still beets. Get that out of here. I'm going to fight you. But not with this hummus, which is delicious. Check out all of their flavors at lantanafoods.com and find it at Bush's, Kroger, Meijer, or check your local grocer. Got a blend of white beans and beets with a hint of apple vinegar, and they top it with more beets. All right, special teams was a bit of an adventure. So Michigan blocks a field goal. Maurice Hurst surges into the backfield, puts up his big mitt, and turns a 51-yard field goal attempt that was probably going to be not good anyway, given what we've seen from Griffin Oaks from that distance, into a big Michigan return. And I think everybody was like, oh, crap, we didn't get into the end zone. And sure enough. But that's a big play.
Yeah.
And then James Doug Fugue
continues to just crush it on kickoffs.
Well, and they've really perfected the, like, we're going to have a 4.5 second hang time kick that lands at the 2.
So that you get to return it to the 15 if you're lucky, basically.
I mean, they had 2 or 3 kickoff returns that got to the 15 in this game.
Yeah.
And
they also had the one where, like, Fogue's worst kick of the year ends up pinning them at the 13 because the dude fields it while he's stepping out of bounds.
Yeah, he was literally standing out of bounds.
Yeah.
That's a penalty in the NFL, right?
Like, I think... Yeah, that might be an illegal touch at that point.
No, so, like, there was, like, an NFL game. I think the Lions were playing in it. You should know this.
You know, I have actually successfully lessened my Lions viewership late.
I think it was like the Falcons or something. So there was a ball that was kind of like on the sideline after it had bounced. And so what the guy did is he was laying out of bounds and then he reached back in and touched the ball and that they put it on the 40.
I do remember that.
So this guy was standing out of bounds and he caught the ball. But apparently that's not a penalty, which it should
It worked
be.
Out.
Yeah.
You know. He got what he deserved for that terrible decision, which was, I'm sure the coaches yelled at him quite a bit, and he pinned his team at the 13.
Yeah, so that was
So the Fogue had one bad kick that ended up working out okay, but otherwise he was excellent as usual.
Yeah, Nordine grooves 38 and 40-yard field goals.
No doubters.
Now at 88% on the season with one of those misses from 52 yards. So
We were pulling for because he was kicking towards the end where they're like doing all the construction in the end zone. And we were rooting for him to like put it up on top of where the construction area was. And he got close a couple times, but,
yeah, that did kind of look like fallout in that end zone. I was like,
yeah, it was a little weird. They had like one kick ended up like underneath where the bleachers were being, constructed, but there was like a gap underneath it. And some construction worker had to go like fish the ball out from under. Like I thought that ball was going to be discovered when they demolished Memorial Stadium. Yeah. But it was kind of interesting watching the action down there.
And then, of course, the main bad thing was a punt return that turned the game from a solid Michigan victory into an overtime squeaker.
Yep.
I mean,
Harris is a dangerous return man.
Yeah, and that was like the one punt from Robbins where it was like really a boomer.
Yeah.
And in that situation, I would have been fine with a 39-yard kick that was fair caught.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have been okay with one of his moon balls there because he's very much established that he can kick those.
Yeah, so, you know, he also, like, left one, like, there was, like, a pooch punt that he attempted that was at, like, the 25.
Yeah, he put that too high.
And I was like,
I think it was a 25-yard punt.
Yeah, it was, yeah, so not ideal.
But you can tell that he's, like, they're trying to do a lot with him in terms of, like, different styles of punting. And, I mean, there's a lot of little things you can do.
Yeah.
Like, Pat McAfee is an interesting follow on Twitter sometimes because he'll talk about, like, the intricacies of, like, the different ways that you can punt the ball. He's also, like, a radio loudmouth, so I just check in every once in a while.
There was one tweet on my timeline from him that was like, oh, my God, look at this crazy, like, punt where he's, like, trying to make it bounce sideways, and it bounces sideways, and I was like, okay.
Yeah, like, I didn't realize that there were so many ways that you could try to manipulate, like, the spin with the way you're dropping the ball and whatever, but it's clear that like they're trying to do some more advanced stuff with Robbins, and he may not have it quite dialed in yet, but I think he's going to be really good.
So like for the most part, the stuff that Michigan can control, I think they've done a good job in. Like they can't really control the fact that Donovan Peoples-Jones hasn't really had a returnable punt.
No, he was just getting buried.
You know. But, like, they got a field goal block in this one. Their kickoff is excellent. Their field goal kicker is excellent. Their punting is solid.
And decent.
They give up the return, but like that'll happen when you're in a pro-style punt formation. The Cheeseman hold was another one of those calls where it's just like, what is going on?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a holding call on a long snapper.
And it was totally irrelevant. Like, that guy's not going to go block a punt, right? And it wasn't a hold. It was just
a block.
The guy getting over. Can't call a long snapper. Come on, man.
That was Michigan's school record-setting 16th penalty.
All right.
Fun game.
So the feelings ball, we already mentioned that the bad man yelled at the refs, but it was really very frustrating.
It was to
see Michigan get called for a bunch of crap afterwards. That was just...
I think we should also establish that Indiana was called for some crap that they didn't deserve, especially on the interception.
Well, the interception,
but,
yeah, clearly.
I mean, this was just a poorly officiated game.
Yeah, this crew had a real, real rough outing. And then the game theory stuff. I hate saying game theory now ever since, like, that tweet from that one jabroni on Twitter.
It's time for some game theory.
And then, anyway. Michigan turtled in this game. They turtled at the end of the first half. They turtled pretty much the whole second half. I am fine with that.
Yep. I do not want to see John O'Korn trying to lead a, like, two-minute drill.
People were yelling at me. They were yelling at you
yep.
on Twitter about how it's disgusting.
There was an extended debate. It actually lasted all the way through the game because people thought that Indiana coming back meant that Michigan still should have gone for that score at the end of the first half, and that is not how logic works.
I mean, like, what's the best way for Michigan to score at the end of the first half? Probably run the ball.
Yep.
Right? Like,
or, like, punt it back to Indiana and hope that, like, Richard Leggow gets in there for a snap.
2.9 yards an attempt, people.
That's not how you move the ball downfield in 2 minutes.
And, like, in the second half when they were just running the ball, like, when it was successful and they decided to go to a pass, we had the incident we talked about earlier in where he just missed the wide-open Zach Gentry for a touchdown.
Yeah.
So even if you do drop back and you do get a good play on and you do have a guy wide open, what are the chances that this actually gets you yards?
Yeah, and we saw O'Korn throw, you know, a should-be interception, some other sketchy throws, you know. I would assume that the odds of a turnover were higher than the odds of a touchdown yeah. on that drive. And in that case, take it to, especially since Michigan was receiving the second half kickoff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you're the Patriots and you got Tom Brady, yeah, go for the 2-for-1. Michigan does not have that.
No, and then in the second half, like, you're up 10 points. It seems like the only thing that's going to get Indiana back in the game is a huge play. They get that huge play, but they also got a 46-yard field goal at the end of that game, largely because of the Cheeseman hold.
Yeah, and they had to use all three of their timeouts relatively early because Michigan had done a great job of shortening the game and running clock down.
Yeah. So I have no problem with the way that Harbaugh approached this game. I do honestly have a problem that they didn't put Brandon Peters in the second half. That, I mean, you just don't have enough from O'Korn that you can justify leaving him in there. I, like, after the Gentry thing, I would have pulled him on the next drive.
Yeah, I would have been more reticent to say put Peters in if the offensive line had been giving up a ton of pressure, but they were not. And so, because I think the one lingering worry with Peters is, like, what if you put him out there and kind of break him?
Right, get him Devin Gardner.
Yeah, but it didn't look like this game was going to have that happen. And in that case, you know, at least see what you got.
Yeah, people are yelling at me about, like, you think a freshman is a savior? And I'm like, I don't need a savior.
Yeah,
I need 6 yards and a
borderline competence would be an upgrade.
I need someone to be a D+.
we are not asking for the world here.
Maybe a C-. And it's a little bit difficult because you're looking at Peyton Ramsey, who's a redshirt freshman, functioning. He's not playing well, but he's playing much better than John O'Korn.
Yeah.
So.
And even with Ramsey, it took Ramsey a while to surpass Richard Leggow, who was just awful for most of this year. Coaches really, they don't want to put those young guys in unless they absolutely have to.
Well, I mean, what I heard is that, you know, they have a subset of the offense that Peters had his head around, and that was what they ran in the spring game.
Yeah.
And
when you went to the full playbook, that can be overwhelming.
Right, and that he's not ready yet, and there are reasons that he's not ready that are, you know, good reasons.
Legitimate. But, yeah, legitimate. But Michigan's already limiting the playbook because their quarterback is so bad that they can't do a lot of the stuff they want to do. So at that point, if you're going to work with a skinny playbook, at least do it with the guy who can execute throws.
Yes. So, I mean, there's not ready to surpass Wilton Spate at the beginning of the season, and then there's not ready to surpass John Okorn after a sub-Nick Sheridan performance.
Oof.
I mean, it's true.
I'm not disputing that. I just, oof.
Nick Sheridan averaged 4.5 yards an attempt, which would have been a 50% upgrade on this game. Wow, that was expansive.
Yeah.
So
do you disagree with the expansiveness of that side?
No. Yeah. But let's put it in perspective, right?
Yeah.
Like this performance was worse than the average expected performance from 2008.
Yeah, and when you put it in those terms, it's hard to argue against the desire to put Brandon Peters in.
So I kind of get, like, we're going to start Okorn against Penn State because Peters has never seen the field.
Yeah, and that's a throwing him into the lion pit situation.
I mean, I'd still do it, but I'm not gonna complain if they don't.
That's legitimately a tough call. I think you might have to at least start Okorn, and then if it starts going south in a hurry, you might have a quick hook there. But that's asking a lot of a guy's first start.
I mean.
But it's not asking him a lot if you're just asking him to average 4.5 yards an attempt.
Right, like a handoff several times and then drop back to throw, and if Zach Gentry's open, throw it to him.
Yeah, but they might want to get a gauge on Penn State's pass rush and how effective it is before they throw
him
in there.
Sure, but like Okorn is going to start against Penn State. He's not going to move the ball. And then it's like, just like, is it close enough to make it worth going to Peters? And then when they play Rutgers, it should be Peters.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no question about it. Okorn's not going to be here next year. If Michigan does lose to Penn State, they got two conference losses.
You're kind of functionally out of the title race at that
you're
point.
You're pretty much done, and you're just like, okay, are we going to the Outback or the Citrus? Or
yeah, and you're clear if they lose to Penn State, they're clearly not getting there with John Okorn.
Right, so
they're pretty clearly not getting there with John Okorn anyway.
Yeah, at that point, you got to go with Brandon Peters because he is not a guy who's a fifth-year senior averaging 3 yards an attempt. All right. Let's take a break. Come back. Talk to Jamie.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley. So did Larry Page. And so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street, or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog, and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Eufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
I was the third brother of five, doing whatever I had to do to survive. I'm not saying what I did was all right. Trying to break out of the ghetto was a day-to-day fight. Being down so long, getting up didn't cross my mind. But I knew there was a better way of life, and I was just...
We welcome in Jamie Mack at JustCoverBlog.com. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing great, guys. Just wrapping up another fun and exciting college football weekend where in the Big Ten, quarterbacks that threw for 120, 82, and 58 yards ended up on the winning side.
Big Ten!
Yes, yeah, Big Ten.
That is, oh God, where do we even start? All right, let's do it. You know exactly where I'm going.
Oh, I know where you're going.
Rutgers 35, Illinois 24.
What the hell, Illinois?
Rutgers wins with their starting quarterback getting 89 passing yards versus 308 for Jeff George Jr. What the heck?
Yeah. Well, 172 of those came in the fourth quarter when they were down 18 points or less to Rutgers.
I see.
So, yeah, Jeff George Jr. put a lot of those yards up once they were down 28-10. And then he put a couple touchdowns in the fourth quarter, but Rutgers also scored in the fourth quarter. So despite all that late yardage by Illinois, they were never – down less than double digits at any of that time.
I'm actually disappointed in Illinois. Like I enjoyed Rutgers just going 0-8 every year and getting shut out.
Yeah, no, I'm not happy with how this came out.
I mean, I follow a couple of Illinois fans on Twitter. It's weird that there are like two Illinois fans, and I'm like, yeah, they're good Twitter follows. But I have two of them, and they're very upset.
Yeah,
I think I could have just kind of goes without saying.
I mean. Especially since they have the whole like moral victory thing that they were that they were grasping onto before, and now it's just like you don't have those now. There's no moral victory to have here.
Yeah, this game started like you would have expected a Rutgers-Illinois game to start. They exchanged three and outs. There was a lost fumble. There was a 3rd and 29, and there was a missed field goal doinked off the left goalpost. All within the first 6 minutes of the game. But then from there, Rutgers actually, has anybody ever said this before? They kind of dominated. After that.
That's really the most upsetting thing about this game is, like, a team looked competent.
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, this was the team that went 6-for-12 for 102 passing yards, but they looked competent. They ran all over Illinois.
There were six total turnovers in this game.
Yeah, they did also lose three fumbles.
Yeah. At one point, Rutgers scored on three straight possessions. It was the first time they've scored on three straight possessions against a Power 5 team. Since the 2015 finale against Maryland. So they did showcase a little competence.
I'm so disappointed by this.
Yeah.
We know who the worst team in the league is now. It's Lovie Smith's Illini.
Yes, that is without question. Moving on to the most worthless game in the league, Ohio State 56, Nebraska 14. And Dave has helpfully given me a stat sheet with four arrows pointing to one number. What number do you think that is?
Zero interceptions for Tanner Lee.
That is correct.
That's the bright spot. Not only no pick sixes, but also no interceptions. So
this was this bad without any Tanner Lee pick sixes. Ohio State gains 633 yards and probably couldn't have gained 800.
I think they scored touchdowns on their first seven possessions.
Yes. It was like 49-0.
Yeah, they actually scored touchdowns on their first eight possessions.
Oh, woof.
And they only had nine drives on the night, and the Buckeyes averaged 70.3 yards per drive. Ugh.
So, Mike Riley, maybe pack it on in, buddy.
Yeah, I mean, there is a story here that this offense has woken up. Like, they had kind of a dismal game against Oklahoma. They had a lot of crappy games last year where they just didn't look like a coherent, functional passing offense. And now they're running mesh a ton, and JT Barrett is averaging almost 10 yards an attempt. And I'm just, like, not a fan of that.
No.
No, and, you know, last night was every bit the controlled scrimmage that the UNLV and the Army games were.
So Ohio State is rather looming, unfortunately. Moving on.
Yeah.
As quickly as possible.
Wisconsin 17, Purdue 9, in a game that's way more of a blowout than the score indicates.
Yeah, from a box score standpoint, this was a decisive decision for Wisconsin. They outgained the Boilermakers 494 to 21. They averaged 7 yards per play to produce 4. And Jonathan Taylor for the Badgers had 219 yards. He almost outgained the whole Purdue team.
There was an incredible Jonathan Taylor stat from yesterday that Pro Football Focus posted, because of those 219 yards, I believe it was 194 came after contact.
Yeah, that's a great stat. I mean, he averaged 7.3 yards per rush, and 14 of his carries went for 6 or more yards yesterday. But before the game-ending kneel downs, 17 of Wisconsin's 60 plays went for more than 10 yards. Taylor's running had a lot to do with that.
So Wisconsin has a couple of hiccups. They throw a couple picks. They lose a fumble. How is this game even close?
Well, you know, the Badgers scored easy touchdowns on their first two drives, and then on their final 7 drives of the game, they didn't score any points. They had 2 interceptions. They lost 1 fumble. They had a great drive where they were stuffed on 3rd and 1, and they had to settle for a field goal. Max out those opportunities. All 3 of those turnovers, for example, were in Purdue territory. So max out on those opportunities, they run away with this game. But on the other hand, you know, Purdue had a lot of opportunities to make the game closer or even steal it. They blocked a punt. They didn't get any points out of it. They started 3 drives in Purdue territory, in Badger territory, after a pair of turnovers and after the aforementioned blocked punt, they only got 3 points out of it.
All right, so Wisconsin has won the West, right?
Yeah.
This was the West championship game somehow.
It was. And, you know, Purdue, I mean, talk about a contrast between teams they play. When they played Michigan and Wisconsin, they only averaged 3.9 yards per play, 6.1 versus everybody else. They complete 66% of their passes, except for when they played Michigan and Wisconsin, that number was down to 44%. And the good thing for the Boilers going forward is there's a lot of everyone else that's left on their schedule. They probably the only 2 good defenses they play the rest of the way are Iowa and Indiana, rather, to close the season. But they got Rutgers, Nebraska, Illinois, and Northwestern coming up here in a row. I think the Boilers could go on a winning streak.
Oddly, so do I.
yeah. I mean, I think they're going to finish 2nd in this division. I really do.
All right, moving on. Northwestern 37, Maryland 21. The great Max Bortenschlager has 3 touchdowns, but averages only 6.7 yards an attempt as Maryland gets outgained by almost 200 yards from a Northwestern offense that was kind of left for dead. Like, I think we expected Maryland's offense to go off a cliff after their top 2 quarterbacks went out.
Maryland can fool you into thinking that they could sometimes beat some of these middle class teams in the Big Ten because of the running back tandem and because of DJ Moore. And yesterday, DJ Moore was great. He had over 200 yards receiving. He kept them in the ballgame at the first half. But the Johnson-Harrison combination got totally stoned. They were 19 carries, 51 yards. That's it. They need all 3 of those guys to do well for them to beat any of these, you know, middle-class teams in the Big Ten. Meanwhile, Northwestern, I mean, this is hard to figure out. You know, I mean, we bag Peyton Thorson every week. All of a sudden, he played really well yesterday. They ran 93 plays against Maryland yesterday. That's crazy.
That is crazy. I mean, this is a team that got skunked by Duke, right? They got they got annihilated.
Big Ten might not be very good this year.
No.
Yeah. So they got annihilated by Duke, but I don't think their offense hadn't looked good in any of their prior two Big Ten games before the Maryland game.
Well, and this was still a game where Thorson averages 6 yards an attempt and throws two picks. He's not exactly, you know, pushing for the Davey O'Brien here.
I think Brandon Peters could hit those numbers.
I would hope so. Against Maryland? Yeah.
I mean, this does kind of take Maryland off the potential ugly upset threat list. Maybe not entirely off.
Yeah.
Max Bortenschlager led them in rushing in this game. I think they're off the list.
Okay.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good. He actually got hurt yesterday. He was holding his arm, but Maryland never had the ball after that play. So I was wondering if they were going to have to dip even deeper into their quarterback.
So angry Maryland quarterback Hayden Gott is absolutely a thing, right?
Yeah, definitely a thing.
Yeah,
totally.
This happened to them a couple of years ago.
Too. Yeah, they had a year where they were playing a linebacker quarterback.
Yeah, that's their backup now.
Yeah,
I think it's the same linebacker.
Good Shane Lord, Cockerell. Maryland. Who is their starting linebacker?
No, and he's not very good because he's a quarterback. All right, finally, Michigan State 30, Minnesota 27. I did tune into this for a little bit. I couldn't stand watching Demry Croft try to quarterback at people. It was I turned it on, and there's a replay of, guess what? A hilariously open Minnesota wide receiver in the end zone being missed by about 5 yards.
In the car last night as we were on the way home, I was refreshing Twitter, and I followed the Daily Gopher, the SB Nation Minnesota site, and they mentioned that, there was a tweet, they pulled Connor Rota for Demry Croft.
Yeah.
And then, 5 minutes later, Demry Croft just threw a terrible interception. And then I scrolled down one further, and I think it was in the bleachers, it tweeted something about, hey, Minnesota, you should have your quarterback throw your passes. And he had tuned in partway through the play, and the throw had looked so bad that he legitimately thought that it was a running back trying to throw the ball. So that's Minnesota.
Yeah.
And you know what? The sad thing is the Croft kid might be the better option than Rota.
Yeah, at least he can run a little bit.
Yeah. He played a lot in the opener against UB. He had a lot of snaps in the opener, but I guess he's been suspended. I don't really know the details there, but he's off suspension, and they threw him in there yesterday, and he sort of led a mini comeback. They cut it to within 3 points. They covered the spread late. I know some people are interested in that, but it's hard to, he looked confident at the end of the game when Michigan State was probably playing kind of like a prevent defense, but they're in trouble in Minnesota. They're not running the football the way they used to. They're not playing defense the way they used to. The quarterback position is still a big problem. TJ Fleck has to kind of do some guruing up on that front, or I don't think he's going to have much success long-term at Minnesota.
Well, they get Illinois next week at least, so that'll be a bounce-back opportunity, to say the least.
Yeah, that'll definitely help Smith and Brooks' numbers. They only had 17 carries for 51 yards combined yesterday. That's the third time this year the duo has been held to less than 3.5 yards per carry. There was also a fourth time this year where they were held to 3.8. This was supposed to be, one of the best duos in the Big Ten, if not the country. And they've by and large been ineffective all year.
I mean, really, the only interesting thing for Michigan State is LJ Scott comes back and runs for almost 200 yards.
Also loses a fumble.
Yeah.
He also lost a fumble.
When did he lose that fumble?
I don't know. I just see it on the stat. I didn't watch the second of this game. I was in a car.
Yeah.
I mean, Lewerke has
LJ Scott was dominant last night before those Gophers. Before the Gophers late was there in the fourth quarter, he actually had more total yards, more rushing yards, more first downs earned, and more touchdowns than Minnesota. Of course, all of that except for the rushing figure changed because of those late drives that Minnesota had after the outcome of the tournament. But he was great. It was probably his first big game of the year.
I mean, the outcome wasn't quite determined in this. Minnesota did have a shot at an onside kick with a minute left, so I don't know if it can all be ascribed
all
to
all circuits
just...
are busy. Please try your call again later. Announcement 8, switch 2-1-1-7.
Well,
All circuits are busy.
All circuits are busy.
Well, we were basically done anyway.
We were. So, I just saw a stat of sorts, and I want you to guess at it.
Okay.
What do you think was the highest rated college football game yesterday across all networks?
I mean, it's probably bizarre. I would guess Texas-Oklahoma, but I know that's wrong.
Michigan-Indiana.
Really?
Yep. With a 2.9 overnight rating, Michigan-Indiana was the most watched college football game on Saturday.
Well, it was a nooner, and it was competitive, so like there weren't really wasn't anything else going on.
But it was just for that ugly game to be the game that the most people tuned into, that's too bad, really.
Yeah, well.
But there are a lot of Michigan fans out there, I guess, so.
Yeah, and a lot of people who want to see Michigan lose.
That too.
All right, that's our show. Bye, Jamie.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I am A. Sambender along with Brian Cook. All circuits are busy.
I'm not going to complain about most of my mentions again. Okay, that's a lie.